Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us or send us a favorite recipe, you can find us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, we have a website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about being gracious. And of course, that's something that we always strive to be, primarily because we're going to be good examples to the other people in the room, to our participants. And we want them to be gracious, so we need to set a good example. But in our context, like we often do on this show, let's define what being gracious is, shall we? So that we know that we're all talking about the same thing. What is being gracious within our context? Within the context of a seminar, a workshop, an alternative to dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, whatever it is that we're doing within the context of participation in the group and usually us as leader. So what does it mean to be gracious within our context? Oh, and I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Let's see. Q says that being gracious in our context is to be polite regardless of the situation. Yes, to be polite regardless of the situation. We have to, as leader, set a standard. And we want to always be polite and to never... people are saying to not take the bait, which is an Americanism. But it is true. It means that even if someone has breached our civility rules and is not being polite, we will set a standard of graciousness and be polite anyway, and not get on their level, take the bait is a good expression, but we are in a global show, and it's kind of an Americanism, and probably people are telling me that there's all kinds of different translations for that, and it all ends up the same way, but it means that we won't stoop to their level. Just because someone is being ungracious, being rude, perhaps, and not polite, we will not answer in kind and let the situation deteriorate. But yeah, this is a very good point. A lot of people are saying that's why people are rude, because they want the situation to deteriorate and they want to sabotage the process. Yes. And we've talked about bullying and other sabotage acts in prior shows. recipeforpeacenow.com. They're all archived. Please do look. But sometimes people are there to sabotage the situation. They're not there in good faith. Or they're just plain ordinary bullies, and they like making everybody kind of uncomfortable. We will enforce the civility rules, and we will enforce them also for ourselves by being gracious, by being polite, as Q says, regardless of the situation. Good point. We've got quite a few new people. Thank you very much for being here. We've got quite a few people that have come back. Thank you also. Thank you all of you for all of your participation and your time in listening. The civility rules, we talk about them a lot on this show. Recipe for Peace Now has no actual rules. We always say whatever works, whatever works according to the situation. In fact, a lot of you say, I say, it depends a lot, and I'm afraid that I do, because what you need to do oftentimes depends upon the group dynamic, upon the situation that's in front of you. And we talk about how to reasonably work that in this program, But the civility rules are always with us. They're very simple, the base one. The base one says we will not be rude to each other. We're going to be civil. Yeah, that's the base rule. Now, if you've got a group of participants that is really basically in agreement, and they're all there in good faith, that's a wonderful and beautiful thing. And they just need to be led towards the process of what to do about it to get to their successful outcome. We've got this mission. We've got this outcome in mind. What should we do to get there? But we're all of like mind, and we just need guidance. We need someone to help us to really solidify the practicalities of it and help us through the process step by step. You don't need to have the civility rules written down for that, because everyone is friendly. They're in the same lockstep. They're all of the same mind, and they won't breach the civility rules. They will not be rude to each other, and they'll take turns talking, and they will listen, and they will consider, and they will work their way through the process to a successful conclusion. If you've got a group that is not like that, and there is dissension, or you've got people who are not certain that they think the process is going well or that they want it to go forward, you need to actually have civility rules. Some of you I know actually write them down. I don't tend to, but you could, depending on the group. And you need kind of a more tailored to the situation set of civility rules, right? Yeah. We have in our day talked about, and I do this depending on the group, because I'm going to say it depends again, talked about taking turns, for example. Now, some groups naturally take turns. You raise your hand, everybody gets their turn. We all consider it very carefully. Mm-hmm. The opinions are all put together and are all helpful. And if they're not helpful, we talk it through and find out, well, maybe we'll sideline that and go forward with the main. But nobody gets excited. They're all excited for success and not for their individual needs. Some groups, for example, have to enforce the taking turns rule, which is a civility rule, right? You will not butt into someone else's presentation. You will not hijack the meeting and be the only one that speaks. You will under no circumstances malign anyone else. Or, yes, some of you see people that call each other bad names and things. No. We nip that in the bud right away. We stop it right away. And that's what the timeout is for, to have a discussion. That's what the threat of expulsion is for, if it's a viable threat. Remember never to threaten to throw someone out who cannot be thrown out, and they know it. Because sometimes people are integral to the process. And when we have the butting in part, yeah, people are going, what do you do about the butting in part? I actually, if I've got that kind of a group, and I know that a lot of you do this too, we actually assign an amount of time per speaker that you could speak, right? And we either go around the room and ask everybody what they think, depending on the situation, or people who want to speak only have so much time, and then there is someone else can talk, and you're not allowed to interrupt. I actually favor, and this is just because it's what I do, I actually favor setting a time, amount of time, like 3 minutes, and I favor having a timer in the room that ticks so that you can see like a cooking timer. I actually use a kitchen timer, a big plastic kitchen timer. You set it for 3 minutes, it ticks off, and then it goes ding real loud, right? And the reason I do that is so that no one feels that they haven't had their fair amount of time. Because no matter how much time you give them, it's too short, right? And people are asking if someone doesn't use all their time, can they give it to the next person? Can they give it to someone they favor that's on their side? Yeah, I usually allow that just in the spirit of goodwill. Sometimes, I'm going to say it depends again. sometimes that gets out of hand, and you can't allow someone to hijack the group kind of fraudulently. I don't want to say that nicer. But I actually once saw this. I only saw it once because usually my groups, they understand that these kind of little tricks are really not a good thing and that we're trying to make a convivial atmosphere and that you have to kind of go along with it and see where the ride takes you. And I'm not someone you play games with, and I actually stopped this immediately, and we all had a laugh because I'm always gracious, right? Polite, yes. And I once saw it where someone had made a deal with the other people on his side, so to speak. There was kind of, it was a fairly contentious issue. Everyone wanted the same goal, but they wanted to achieve it in different ways, and they wanted to get to the same goal without having to deal with those other people, which is an interesting thought because, as we plainly know, and we've discussed, and we discuss in the room when we have that, we've all got the same goal in mind. Success looks the same. Why we want it is different, but success looks the same. Let's strive towards that mission. That's the kind of group that needs a mission statement. And anyway, he made it up with his fellows, with the people that he kind of was aligned with, that they would each raise their hand and say like one sentence and then give him the rest of their time, right? Yeah. No. That's why the rules are fluid. They have to do with the situation at hand. That's why I'm not real big on the civility rules being written down. Yes, I suppose that's true. I do make them up as I go along. But that it has to do with the behavior of the participants and the group and the group dynamic. The only actual civility rule is that we will be civil, that we will be polite and not rude to each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else? How else should we define how to be great, being gracious within our context? Barbara says to be kind and aware of potential impact. I like it. We'll be gracious is to be kind and aware of potential impact. Right? Yeah. To always think about people's feelings. And also, if you're going to do something in front of the group, especially if we're going to talk about criticism a little later in the show, especially if it might be deemed kind of a criticism, you need to be kind and aware of how it's going to impact the participant in the eyes of the group, right? Yeah, which is why I try very hard not to give public criticism of somebody sitting there in the group because it causes them to, well, yeah, people are calling it lose face, but it causes them to be embarrassed. And I don't want anybody to be embarrassed in front of the group unless they have done something that I'm certain is deliberate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that's kind of a civility rule take, right? That's kind of a, you know, that is inappropriate kind of criticism. That is different because everybody understands that, and bad behavior is catchy, right? It's contagious. And you don't want the other people to go, well, you got away with that. Maybe I don't have to work so hard. Or maybe this is not the right group, right? No. So you want, bad behavior is different. It's outside this conversation. Because you need to be polite and gracious anyway, because you can't get rude. We're a good example. But deliberate bad behavior is a completely different thing than dumb or kind of biased. Or something like that, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lazy. People are using all kinds of little sentences there, yeah. But a lot of that's not exactly deliberate. I mean, I suppose they're bozos, but it's not deliberate to kind of derail the group, is what we're talking about. So you need to be kind and consider the potential impact. Mm-hmm. I always try to do that before I open my mouth and say anything. How will this impact the group? How will it impact the relationship of this person to the group, to the dynamic? Lyle makes a real good point that within our context, to be gracious is to not respond in haste or annoyance. Not respond in haste or annoyance. Yes. You got to think first. You got to take two deep breaths. Remember you're the leader. Remember you're the good example. And even if you aren't annoyed, even if this person is really kind of, yeah, it's an Americanism, but it means getting under your skin, kind of really, really hitting your last nerve there. After all, we are human. I mean, we've got emotions and feelings and opinions, right? Even though we're the third party impartial, as you sit there, as you deal, as you negotiate, you form an opinion, really, secretly, about what you think would be the better conclusion. Mm-hmm. And those opinions have validity, but they're also private, right? You can't just say your opinion because you're the third party impartial. And you can't get annoyed. Mm-hmm. You got to be the calm one. Mm-hmm. To be gracious is not to respond in haste, not too fast. Think before you talk, or annoyance. The think before you talk is the biggie one. Yeah. Because if you take two deep breaths and think before you talk, you will not respond in annoyance. You will respond in a gracious, polite, and firm manner. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shaylin says that it's to consider the consequences and temper your response. Yeah, that's the haste and annoyance. Being gracious within our context is to consider the consequences and temper your response. Three deep breaths. If I lead the group in this direction, what's the consequence? I will therefore respond as a good example and enforce the civility rules, for example. Consider the consequences and temper your response. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good point, too. Grady says that being gracious within our context is to refuse to be goaded into an ungracious response. Yeah, that's it. That's the haste and annoyance and the consequences and temporary response. You refuse to be goaded into an ungracious response. Sometimes you've got the best comeback on the tip of your tongue. You really do. It would really put someone in their place, and it would be really, you know, kind of funny. Yeah. And like that. And you'd really like to use it. And it would be ungracious and unleader-like. And you don't want the other participants to do that. If you don't want your participants to respond like you're about to respond, then you're trying to respond in an ungracious manner and you're not being a good example. Think about it. I always think about it that way. If somebody in the group did that, what I'm about to do, would I think it was good? If the answer is no, even though I'd like to, I am never goaded into an ungracious response, right? Mm-mm. We will not let the group dynamic deteriorate. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go on to our next area, now that we've decided what being gracious within our context is. Because, you know, we could do an entire show of it. It's kind of like, yay! But we've only got an hour together. And I'm supposed to try to make it to the recipes, although, quite frankly, those of you who have been here know that frequently we get so involved with the conversation, it's so interesting, that we don't quite make it to the response, to the recipe part. Okay. Let's ask a question. How should we graciously react in receiving a compliment? Let's start with that. Actually, you know, it seems like a compliment's, you know how to react. I must tell you that I actually was criticized for my response to a compliment. And I thought about it. And I went, you know, that's a really good point. Because someone gave me a gracious compliment, and I denigrated it. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe women do this more than men sometimes. It was a compliment on something that I was wearing. And instead of saying thank you and leading in to, and then saying where I got it or whatever, and being gracious and being pleased that I had been complimented, I kind of made it like the compliment was, people are saying, they're agreeing with me. A lot of people are agreeing. Kind of denigrated the compliment and made it like you shouldn't have complimented me because it's not much of a thing. When really, it was much of a thing. It was a piece of jewelry that I was wearing that I inherited from my grandmother. And I would have liked to have talked about it. And people love to know. And therefore, nowadays when somebody gives me a compliment or they say something nice about my leadership skills, I beam, because you need to remember that a compliment is sincerely given and it's something good that someone has given you. Yeah. Yeah, so how should we graciously accept a compliment? How should we graciously react when receiving a compliment? Linda says with a thank you. Yes, remember to say thank you. Oh, thank you. Oh, I'm so glad that you enjoyed participating in the group. Thank you. I'm so glad you noticed. Thank you. Yeah, with a thank you and a big smile. Uh-huh. Because a compliment is a wonderful thing. And it's funny, but I had to actually be told that. I didn't think about it, but we're kind of trained to be, in a sense, defensive. Yeah. Uh-huh. How else? Tiquico. I hope I did that right. Tiquico. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yes, I did. Tiquico says, by acknowledging the compliment and returning it by giving a compliment. Yes. That's always wonderful. By acknowledging the compliment and then returning it by giving a compliment. I so enjoyed the leadership of your leadership of this group. Thank you. I enjoyed having you. You were a wonderful participant. You see, by acknowledging it, thank you. By returning the compliment. I enjoyed having you as a participant. Yes. And so we made a circle, and a really nice circle, and people remember that and feel pride. Yeah, because a lot of times the groups that I do are important groups. There's something that people really want to be a member of, and they're honored to be there, and they want to know that they deserve to be there, right? Thank you. And then you turn it around and you give a compliment. Yeah. Very nicely done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point. Sarah says that how should we graciously react when receiving a compliment? By including the team in addition to ourselves. Thank you. I didn't do it all by myself. And then you point, you name the people that really added to getting the compliment. Added to the award. A lot of times when you get an award, an actual award at a ceremony, I get this occasionally, and when you get up there and you receive the award, a lot of times people that really helped you are in the audience, right? Or it might even be videotaped, well, televised if you're the Oscars, but it might even be videotaped. In fact, frequently award ceremonies are, or shown on some sort of a local channel. And you want to remember that although you're the person grasping the plaque, you're the person up there getting the award, when you say thank you, you need to acknowledge your team, the people that really assisted you in getting that, because you didn't do it all by yourself. Team that helped you. You had people that gave you their time and their effort and their skills and their expertise. Yeah. So you need to acknowledge them. You need to acknowledge your team that you had help. Yeah. And I think that's very important. You don't just grab it and say, thank you. This is all mine. I really like getting awards. You had that kind of thing. No. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. Usually when I get an award, I know in advance that I'm the honoree, right? It's not really a competition like the Oscars or something where there's four people and you could be chosen. You should always prepare remarks so that you don't forget it, so that you've concluded everybody. I'm very big on that. I always have prepared remarks. I must confess that I try not to actually read them off the paper. I can usually remember it well enough. But if you think that you might be kind of not used to speaking in front of people, for example, or something, or get excited, take them with you on a little index card, a little piece of paper, so that you remember to thank everybody. Because there's nothing worse than thanking people and leaving someone off. I mean, I think that might be worse than not thanking them at all. So you need to really have your list of who you're going to thank and what you're going to say. Your gracious 2 minutes, right? Yeah. You should always prep it. I know people get on television, hey, my mother. No. Get it all done. You know that you're getting the award, or you know that you're in contention. It's not a surprise, for heaven's sake. So get it so that you remember everybody who needs to be mentioned. This is an interesting point about the compliments, how to graciously accept a compliment. And I didn't think about this, but I suppose this is true. Yeah, I've seen it tried, but I don't lose track very well. Iman says that how to graciously accept a compliment, your reaction should depend on whether the compliment is a distraction attempt. If it's trying to distract away from the conversation. Pardon me. Distract away from the issues. Your reaction to the compliment should depend on whether the compliment is a distraction attempt. I can see that. Sometimes people might butt in with a compliment in order to break concentration, to break the conversation, to use it as a distraction. I never thought of that as a deliberate act, but it could be. It could be an attempt to control the situation and sway it in a different way, to control the process maybe. It's an interesting tactic. I'll give it I suppose I've seen a compliment as a tactic. I usually say thanks and then I stay on track because I'm not easily diverted. And when somebody gives you a compliment like that, it's a simple thank you and a big smile and like that and a pat on the back, and then you go right back on track, right? And you don't get distracted by it. But it's an interesting point. A compliment could be a ploy, could be a distraction technique. Yeah. So you have to think about that and not digress into some sort of another story or something away from process at hand. Good point. So we've decided to graciously accept a compliment. When should we graciously give a compliment? Could both ways. And we talked about when you get one, you circle it around and give one too, right? Mackenzie says, as often as possible to show appreciation. A lot of people are talking about when somebody's done a good job. It's a compliment for a job well done. And not just kind of accept it as, of course. People would like to have a compliment on it. They'd like to know that you know that they put in a lot of effort and that they really went the extra mile to work on it and to really get a competent result, right? Yeah, job well done. Mm-hmm. Suki and others talking about expenditure of time, that you acknowledge that people have really spent a lot of time on this and really worked it through and really gave a lot of effort. Hussein and others are talking about a compliment for his appreciation. When someone funds something, gives some money. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when you see donor things and donor, some sort of a fundraiser, and they've got the list of donors under how much they gave, that's kind of inducing to people. They'd like other people to run their eye down the donor list and know that they gave this much. It's psychological. There is a theory, at least, that it will make people give more if you have donor levels. Yeah, good point. A lot of big groups, like symphonies and things like that, usually in the arts, come to think of it, because they naturally have entertainment they can give you. Does that make sense? They have like levels where you get to go to an extra party or to an open rehearsal or something like that if you give a certain level of money. But people like to have a thank you, a compliment, because they gave more funds and they helped you out. Because after all, you know, Hussein and others are saying the fundraising is very important oftentimes, because without it, you're not going to be able to complete your successful goal. So it's an important thing to remember, to say thank you and to give appreciation, to give a gracious compliment to someone who is nice enough to help fund you. Simple as that. Arsha and others are talking about team compliments, to compliment the team. Whenever I compliment a team, I always remember that the team is really the people, that it's really made up of individuals. And that I like to name the people who were very, very instrumental and not just say team Rose or something. You know what I mean? I like to actually name who it was that really, really got it together, that was really instrumental in helping us. Yeah, simple as that. So, yeah, I like to give team recognition. If there's going to be... Arsha and others are talking about like an award ceremony to formalize the thank you, to formalize the graciousness, to formalize the gracious compliment, right? To have an actual award ceremony. Excuse me. If I have an award ceremony or I see an award ceremony and I have an opinion about it, and it's given, the award is given to a team, I think every member of the team should get to stand up and get an award. Everybody should get a copy of it, so to speak. They should all get the award. Everybody should to own it so that they can put it on their wall, right? Yeah, that's the whole purpose of it. The whole team should get to stand up, and every individual should get to have the award for themselves. Like if it's a plaque, they make... And there's 12 people in the team. You make 12 plaques with everybody's individual name on it. It's not that hard to do nowadays. And then they should pick one spokesperson if there's going to be a speech, right? Yeah. And that one spokesperson should say thank you very much for the compliment and for the award and like that. But I think everybody should get their own award in the team, because it makes everybody strive, right? Yeah, I know people are giving examples of of awards that go to a team like the World Cup or something. But, pardon me, even in football, if you win the Super Bowl, your team gets the pretty statuette, the pretty award, big award thing, the statue. But each individual player gets a ring to wear. In fact, because there's the theory of team, you know, in the United States, we're real big on football. And the Super Bowl is the last game after, it's like an elimination contest. And the two winning teams after all the eliminations, it's a whole season, get to go to the Super Bowl. It's a big deal. There's a lot of money and prestige and like that involved. It's a big deal to be a Super Bowl champion. And the winning team gets a big statue that they get to keep for a year, I think. I think they give it around, if I'm wrong. But the owner gets to keep it or something. But each individual player gets a Super Bowl ring that they get to wear on their hand and is a big deal. Even better than that, because it's the team is not just the players on the field, right? It's a big business, football. There's the whole team of coaches, and then there's marketing, and there's, all kinds of stuff. There must be hundreds. Well, maybe that's an exaggeration. But there's lots of background people, we'll call them, who are not actually the football players. And you know, when the team that gets to win the Super Bowl, the players get a player's ring, but all the team gets a Super Bowl ring. They get a team ring, so to speak. Not the same exactly as the players, but they all get an award. Because it makes everybody work harder. Because they want the award. Yeah. People are saying they all get a bonus, too. The players sure do. I don't know anything about the bonus or anything. But I've seen, I didn't even know this until I met somebody who had a Super Bowl ring that was, essentially speaking, an administrator. But he was wearing it. He was so proud that he wore it all the time. And it really made people talk about it. And like that. People love to get an award. And everybody in the team should get one. So they can hang it, wear it, show it off. I don't know, fondle it, whatever. But it makes everyone else go, wow. I wish I was a member of the winning team. They get a gracious compliment. They got to go up there and they got to get an award and somebody says something nice. Maybe next year we can do that. So when else should we give a gracious compliment? Caitlin says one is truly deserved. It is a good point. If everyone is routinely complimented, then it loses its meaning, and you no longer strive for success. This is a very good point, that you only give a compliment when it's truly deserved. Otherwise, it loses its meaning. Because everybody gets a compliment, right? It's like, well, not everybody gets the award just for breathing, because then it has no meaning. Mm-hmm. It's like getting a certificate of completion. Now, a lot of times when I do a seminar workshop, people do get a certificate of completion because they are getting some sort of continuing education credit for being there, right? And legal, accounting, whatever on earth it is, or they're getting some sort of work requirement credit. But that's not a compliment, an award, really. It's something that everybody gets. A compliment needs to be special. Caitlin is right. You give a compliment when it's truly deserved, because if everybody was complimented all the time, then it loses its meaning. And you no longer strive for success. Good point. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the other side of this. Oops, I think we're going to run out of time and not do the recipes. Oh, well, we'll do them next time. When should we graciously deliver criticism? Sometimes we've really got something to say. And let's just say it's not a compliment. We need somebody to stop doing something. We need somebody to work harder. We need somebody to listen to the instructions better. Ever have that? Yeah, lots. They need to be put back on track, right? How should we graciously deliver criticism? Mm-hmm. And the amount of tact is always the same. The amount of the amount of tact is always the same. I'm going to say that it depends if the people are volunteers or they're there because a business sent to them. Because a criticism will be more keenly felt on an emotional level if they're volunteers, maybe, but more keenly done, and you only need to say it once if their job depends on it, for example. Yeah. So how should we graciously deliver criticism? Ooh, we've got agreement. Michael and others are all saying in private. Always, if possible, in private. Unless you need to say something on the spot, like dog training. For example, you have given someone a criticism in private, and they're still doing it. You've warned them, still doing it, and they're doing it in front of the whole group. This is the part where you have to say something in front of the whole group. We're going to use peer pressure. But for the first time, I always try to do it in private. In a way, people are saying humans are like dogs, and you need to do it right on the spot, or they don't understand what it was that you didn't like. Well, to a certain extent, but I think that we can remember something long enough to not have to do it on the spot, if we can possibly help it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When should we graciously deliver criticism? Not only in private, but Pearl says with an explanation so that the criticism is understood. Yeah, with an explanation so that it's understood, so that somebody understands what it is that we want. What it is that they're doing, I don't like to use the word wrong, but what it is that they're doing that's not so right. Inam says that a criticism should always be phrased not as a criticism, but as a suggestion. I'm with that. Should be phrased not as a criticism, but as a suggestion, if possible. If it's something that really is kind of egregious and needs to be changed right now, this instant, and it's not a suggestion, it's kind of an order. You have to judge that at the time. But I think tone of voice and facial expression like that are very important, and we need to keep our expression and our tone of voice gracious and not be rude, even if it's a criticism of something that needs to be changed right now, this instant. Mm-hmm. It could be kind of phrased as a suggestion, but the person needs to understand that it's not really voluntary. It's not open to discussion. Because suggestion indicates that you can argue with me, and the answer is no, that you cannot. We're going to do it this way. James says that the criticism should always be a teaching moment and be phrased as such. I try to do that. I'm with Iman and James and others that it should be politely phrased. The tone of voice should be polite. And that it should be seen as a teaching moment and not as a, boy, are you dumb moment, right? Remember to keep annoyance and haste out of our equation, because they will do us no good in the long run. We need to be calm, and we need to really look at it as a teaching moment. Mm-hmm. A teaching moment for how to act within this group, perhaps, right? Yeah. It's all a teaching moment. It's all instruction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, We're going to graciously give criticism in a way that will make people do what we need them to do. Might be a negative, stop doing that. Might be a positive, you need to do that better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we've given some criticism. We've been gracious because we have been. Mm-hmm. And if you're gracious, people will accept criticism and try to do it. Do it well. I think an explanation is very important if it's something that needs instruction, right? That's a teaching moment, not a criticism. As James says, a teaching moment. So how can we graciously accept criticism? What if somebody has something to say about us? Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Hardly ever that happens. But what if they do? What if they have something to say about us? Hopefully they do it in private, by the way. But my experience has been that sometimes they don't. Because they're trying to throw the group off track. They're trying to derail the group dynamic by attacking the leader, which is a tactic, yeah? Kind of like being overly gracious in your compliments. So how should we graciously accept criticism? Violet says, by practicing tolerance of other people's opinions. By practicing tolerance. Okay, you know how some people are quick to take offense? I know people like that. In fact, some of my relatives are like that. They're quick. They always find that somebody has been rude to them or that they don't like them. Most of the time, they've taken offense too fast, in my opinion. And a lot of times, the people have said that it doesn't like me. I think, you know, I don't think they've got that much of an opinion about you. Really, I don't. You know, it's kind of like you're the clerk or something. It's a, well, yeah, there's an expression called thin-skinned that people are using. It means that, every time someone says something, they always think that they're being criticized, that it's personal. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to be tolerant of other people's opinions. It's not personal. It's their opinion, and it's something that they want to put out there. And you have to, as Simon says, be a good example to other participants by not answering with a criticism and escalating the situation. It's tempting, right? But you need to be a good example to the other participants by not answering with a criticism, not answering in kind, and therefore escalating the situation, because that is what the person who is giving the criticism wants. They want to get into a fight. They want to get into a pettiness. They want to derail the process. And we're not going to let them, because we're a good example. Now, you might take this person aside privately and ask for an explanation. Because maybe we're not perfect, and maybe there's a valid point in there, right? Like, I thought about the criticism of my way of accepting a compliment by denigrating it and not being gracious. Wait, you know, you got a good point there. You gave me a sincere compliment, and I acted like you were dumb in saying it was good. Oh, boy, yeah, kind of did, didn't I? Good point, you see. So it's a teaching moment for us, too, to learn something. Mm-hmm. And I do encourage open discussion, all of us do. Mm-hmm. So we need to be a good example to our participants. Somebody says something ungracious or criticizes us. We need to not respond in kind. Let's see, a lot of people are saying that if the criticism may be valid or there's agreement, you need to stop and discuss it, the way in which we're getting to the process, the way in which we're leading. To stop and discuss it if there's general accord. Okay? I can see that. I've never... Okay. I've got a lot of experience, so I've never actually had anybody criticize my leadership. It kind of challenged me. But some of you have seen that, where the leadership is actually challenged by someone because they are, well, because they're feeling ungracious, but because it's a criticism. They want to take over, for example. They want the group to be led in an entirely different direction. And it's a challenge to your leadership. Think about that for a moment. I'm going to say the words, it depends. I am. It depends on why you're the leader, I think. Yeah. Suki and others are saying that if it's a volunteer position and you were the leader because no one else would do it and someone else could do it better and they're more of an expert, then the gracious thing to do is to concede and say, yes, if you're willing to take this over, go with God. I mean, just do it, yeah, and take a vote and see how the group is feeling about it. Because sometimes you might be the leader kind of by default because no one else would do it, or you had the idea and got the group together, but there's someone else in the group with more expertise, right? And they really would be a good choice. You might make a deal. Yeah, people are saying you could make a deal to, like, co-lead if you didn't want to give up your position, to invite them in to help. Yeah, if you're willing to spend the time and effort and come and help me, yes, please do. Please help. Please come. I more than welcome that. You see? Yeah. So that's an interesting point, that it might not take it as a criticism, but as an opportunity to get help. That's a very good point. It's a teaching moment, right? We just discussed that on the other side. Please use your expertise. If you think you can do this better, please help. Please come. Please get right up here and lead us and tell us how, you know, what you think, right? Yeah. And then if that situation arises, I think this is time for a group response, right? Yeah. Yeah, don't do the group, don't be gracious and put down the challenge if you want to stay. But think about it. Pick why you want to. Now, if you are not volunteer and you've been hired or you've been designated by an employer, that's a completely different thing because you are the leader. You cannot be challenged. Mm-hmm. But you could graciously accept assistance from an expert, for example. Hmm? Yeah. Yeah, but you want to be a good example to the other participants by not getting nasty, by not answering with a criticism and escalating the situation. Mm-hmm. Chris and others are saying the way to handle a criticism is with a thank you for the teaching moment. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the teaching moment. Thank you for your opinion. And then move on, right? Or consider the opinion. Right? Talk about it. Depends if it's just a criticism, just a rudeness, or it's really got a valid point to it, right? Yeah. Thank you for the teaching moment. Actually, depending on the situation, because I enforce the civility rules, sometimes I actually say that. Thank you for the teaching moment. In that kind of way that says, you know, you can't hijack this group. We are going for success, right? Thank you for the teaching moment. Mm-hmm. Especially if we've seen somebody try to hijack the group and be rude before. He didn't even say which teaching moment it was. Maybe it's teaching the others not to do that, right? Thank you for the teaching moment. Sit in that final way. Chris says it also confuses them when you do that and they sit down because they didn't really mean to teach you anything. They were just trying to be rude. Thank you for the teaching moment. And you get that expression on your face, right? Yeah. Because it's in front of everybody. And you have been patient. See, that's not your first response. Pardon me, my voice is gone. It's you, I'm going to take a sip of water. Excuse me, it shows it's a live show. That's not your first response. It's like your fifth response to an attempt at rudeness. Because it's not constructive. Criticism should be taken into account if it's constructive. Miyako, she says that you should graciously accept criticism by sincerely considering the comments and being willing to change. Yes, if it's sincere and it's constructive, we're not perfect. Maybe it's something we never thought of. I see that occasionally. It's like this show. It's not scripted. It goes wherever we take it. And sometimes it's something that I didn't think of when we started. And I go, yeah, it's like the compliment as a distraction technique. I didn't think of it just in that way, but Iman did because he'd seen it. And it's like, yeah, you know, that's a good point. I've always said thank you and been very gracious and said thank you four times and then kept on track. But it was probably a distraction technique, just didn't recognize it. So if the criticism is not just a rudeness, but it's constructive, Miyako says you need to be gracious, sincerely considering the comments and being willing to change. Yeah. That's it. Sean and others are saying that you need to listen and ask for specific examples and carefully consider the recommendations. You need to listen. Ask for specific examples because we want to know how to improve and carefully consider the recommendations. Listen, consider, and be willing to change if there's a good point there. Because sometimes there is. And the best point, the best criticism both in both directions is always done privately, right? But some you have to listen to. You don't know everything. I don't know everything. I've been in this business for more than 30 years. I was a child when I started. And sometimes people have something to say that's really, really valid and really interesting and really that you didn't think on. I see that occasionally with the use of technology because I don't keep up with it properly because I'm kind of busy. And sometimes someone says to me, well, why don't you just use this? It would save a lot of time. And I'm like, oh, what is that? Can you explain it to me? Will you show me how? How will it save us? You know what I mean? How would it be good? I didn't know it existed. And that's the honest truth half the time. Or I did know it existed, but I didn't understand how it would be useful. Really, this is true. That is not a criticism. That is really a teaching moment. When somebody says to you, well, why don't you just use GoToMeeting? And I'm like, what? Well, all right, I know about GoToMeeting. But something like that, some sort of a new thing that they've seen used. I'm like, yeah, really? So sometimes a criticism is not a criticism. We can't take it as such. Can't be thin-skinned in this business, right? And it depends on the situation. And if it's valid, if it's constructive, we need to consider it carefully. We need to listen and ask for examples, right? Yeah. And my friends, we've had a wonderful discussion. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. We are out of time. Yes, we'll do the recipes next week, hopefully. I know. We switch them from week to week to week because we get involved in a wonderful conversation. We don't quite make it within our hour to get to the recipes, but we'll get to them eventually. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you'd like to contact us with recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com, the website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. Prior shows are all archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming and for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.